Meditation.
Depending on the quality of my mind.
You know, there's good days and bad days.
I mean, I can feel like the waterfall of thoughts. Every now and then, a nice calm.
I can't think of anything.
This is Meditation in the City.
The Shambhala New York podcast.
Yes, this is episode 103 of the podcast. I'm Dave, your host, as always, and I am concerned. I'm a little concerned. I woke up at 7 o'clock this morning. This is a Sunday that I'm recording this, and I feel like if I wake up at 7 o'clock on a Sunday morning, something is wrong. If I wake up at noon or 1, then there's no cause for alarm. Everything's happening right on schedule. If I get up at 7 o'clock in the morning and I stay up, and I do laundry and get something to eat and, you know, just start my day on a Sunday. I don't really know what to do now with the rest of my day. I don't know. I'm feeling groundless. I'm feeling vulnerable right now. And I just want to be honest with you about that. Today on the podcast, documentary filmmaker and Shambhala Buddhist teacher John Enkele is here to talk to us about that feeling of feeling out of sorts, feeling ungrounded, feeling like you don't really know which way to turn. This was a talk recorded at our weekly Dharma gathering called The Keys to the Kingdom. Before we get to that, I do want to mention that the Shambhala Meditation Center of New York is presenting a 7-day meditation retreat this summer in August, the week of August 19th. This is an opportunity to practice meditation in an intensive retreat environment while still staying in the city. And oftentimes, you know, it's great if you're able to go to a meditation retreat in the mountains or in some secluded village somewhere. And that's fine. But sometimes it's great to do a retreat right in the heart of where you live. And to mix that kind of familiarity of our milieu with the intensive mind expansion of a meditation retreat. And that is what this is. This urban retreat, 7 days of mindfulness meditation with Acharya Daniel Hesse, is happening the week of August 19th to 26th. Maybe you can't do the whole week. Fine. You can register by the day. You know, do 2 days. Do 3 days, or do the whole week. It's a great opportunity to deepen one's practice, and I highly recommend it. For more information and to register, click the link on the homepage, ny.shambhala.org, under featured programs. And now, John Enkele, in a talk that was recorded back in May, entitled The Keys to the Kingdom. So this is a talk about the kinds of things that we think will make us happy.
It could be success at work. It could be a sense of material well-being. It could be finding the right relationship at last. A life of no worries, no anxiety, carefree. That's the promise. And it speaks to us, the dominant culture does, especially when we're feeling tangled up in our own situation, in our own uncertainties, our own worries, whatever they may be. And then there's this idea that, you know, if the universe doesn't provide it, then maybe if only we work harder, we will finally find just the right combination that will deliver on this promise of happiness. Maybe if I just try harder. Maybe if I move to San Francisco and reinvent myself. For me, it was always Santa Fe. I worked on a ranch when I was in college out there. And it was lovely, really, the western sky at 6 p.m. And just the idea of, you know, going back to that, romanticizing the past, getting a pair of cowboy boots. So this theme of the kingdom that we find in Western religion taking the form of heaven or a kind of fulfillment at the end of time or nirvana, the notion of finally bringing together, re-knitting the divided parts of ourselves, or the secular image of the kingdom, finding happiness in the good life. All of these are ways of talking about fulfillment. But two things we can notice in all of them, these ideas about the kingdom, is that they all are attempts to deal with the fundamental unreliability of being born as a human being. Attempts to deal with uncertainty. Uncertainty that is rooted in just the fact that everything is always changing. The Buddha said impermanence and taught this very relationship between the fundamental unreliability of life as a human being and the fact that everything is changing. There's nothing we can hold on to, nothing we can grasp. And if we don't see that, if we don't understand that, then we are caught in suffering, which is a natural part of being a human being. The other thing we notice about these images of the kingdom is that they are always about a projection of life into the future. The life that we imagine for ourselves, the form that it will take with whatever particular details we may add. And that is always appearing in the form of a story in our minds, a story we're telling ourselves about how we want our life to be. So why in the form of a story? Because stories give us something to hold on to. When there's precious little that we can hold on to, a story will do that for us because a story defines things. A story provides clarity. Whether we believe that the universe will take care of us ultimately or whether we think we just need to work harder, still there is this kind of definition we bring into our lives that addresses the uncertainties and the anxieties if we have a story that we tell ourselves about how our life should be. The problem with the story, of course, is that it takes us out of our life, out of the moment where our life is lived, and projects us into a future that is not real. It's just a dream. And sometimes the dream begins to seem more real than the life that is unfolding in front of us. And for those of us who are practicing the Dharma or any spiritual tradition that draws us into greater awareness of who and what we are, this is a wonderful window into ego. Because ego loves the dream. Ego lives in the dream. Ego is the dream. And so we get a chance to see it when we find ourselves getting caught up in the story about the future, about how we want things to be. Ego, by its very nature, has this not yet quality. This can't be it. Because for ego, there is always something missing. Ego is constructed around a sense of lack. Ego is always longing for a time that is not now. It's longing for a life that is other than the one we are living. The stories that we tell ourselves about the future, the stories that make up the dream, separate us from our life as it is. They separate us from what is most real. Joseph Campbell, some of you may know of his work. He died a few years ago, but he taught at Sarah Lawrence. And he was trained, I think, as a disciple of Carl Jung. And he was very interested in myth and symbols, especially in spiritual traditions and in world religions. And one of the things he talked about was the hero's journey, because this was a theme that was in cross cultures. The hero is one who goes out to the edge of what is known about the world, what is known about being human in the world, and the hero comes back with new knowledge and shares it with the people for their benefit. And he was once asked, if among these stories, cross traditions, there was a common theme at the mystical heart of these spiritualities. And he said, yes, there is. The kingdom is spread out before you, but you do not see it. We do not see it. And this was the essence of the Buddha's response to the problem of suffering, to the problem of the fundamental unreliability of life as a human being. Because everything is in flux, everything is constantly changing. But the Buddha's teaching was, if we can cultivate our capacity to see this kingdom that is spread out before us, if we can cultivate our awareness, which is the same as seeing, then we'll be able to see through the stories and let them go. And when we let them go, what presents itself is our life, the kingdom spread out before us. And we know that from sitting. Because when we let go of the story, we see that it was delusion because it vanishes. So seeing is the key. Seeing is the key to practice awareness seeing clearly what is within us and what is spread out before us. And this is the point of view of the Dharma. The kingdom is spread out before us. It's our life. What else could it be? This is it. And everything is shouting to us. This is it. But we don't hear it because our mind is so cluttered with all this other stuff going on. We need to filter out the chatter. And that's why we sit on the cushion. We need to let go of our stories. Letting go and awareness, same thing. In that moment of letting go, we are aware. In that moment of awareness, when we see the story for what it is, we are aware. We're letting go. It's the same thing. Our stories separate us from our life as it is, and that's why we can't see the kingdom that is unfolding before us. We think it's elsewhere. Maybe in some other dimension, maybe in the future, but we're missing it. So, finally, just to give some kind of takeaway, keys to the kingdom, what are they? They're all around us, within reach. And if we open our eyes, we can find them. We can see them. If we pay attention. I thought of three. Opening the door this weekend on Saturday and stepping out and seeing across the street in Riverside Park, the tulips. Springtime is one key. But springtime is just a word. There is no spring apart from the tulips blooming and the birds singing and the blue sky, or in the case of this morning, the raindrops coming down. Nature is waking up, coming alive, and when we open to it, we ourselves are not separate. We are waking up. We are coming alive. I was working on a project a while back, and somebody in it, a cellist who had gone out to listen to the song of the humpback whales and record the whales and come back into a studio and play in response to the whales, I asked him, you know, what do you think the whales are saying to each other in their song? He said, I don't know what they're saying to each other, but I do know what they're saying to me. Beauty will save the earth. He was quoting Dostoevsky. Beauty will save the earth. Beauty brings us to our senses. In seeing the tulips, there is no separation. between us and nature. In that moment, we are nature, aware of itself. In seeing the buds on the trees coming alive, we are experiencing our own aliveness. As my friend sitting over there taking notes said to me once, beauty is surrender and awakening. Isn't that what you said?
Yeah.
Yeah. Surrender and awakening. We are nature aware of itself. There's a wonderful American author, Marilynne Robinson, and recently President Obama was going out to Iowa to do some presidential business of some kind. I think he was maybe opening a factory and talking about the American economy and so forth. But he told his schedulers when he found he was going to go give this speech that he wanted to meet Marilynne Robinson, who's at the Iowa Writers' Workshop. So the White House must have called Marilynne Robinson and said, the president wants to meet you. Not only did he want to meet her, he wanted to interview her because he read her books and loved them. Gilead, Homecoming, most recently, Lila. They're very spiritual books, but they're also very earthy. And they're also very much about the kingdom. One of her characters in Gilead says, wherever you turn your eyes, the world can shine like transfiguration. You don't have to bring a thing to it except your willingness to see. Wherever you turn your eyes, the world can shine like transfiguration. Transfiguration, that's the kingdom. The eternal breaking into the temporal, as Marilynne Robinson would put it. As Buddhists, we might say, the absolute being revealed in the relative, or emptiness is form. Form is emptiness. But then she says, you don't have to bring a thing to it except your willingness to see. Only who could have the courage to see it? Courage, it takes courage. Shambhala level 2, we say fearlessness. It takes fearlessness to step out of our cocoon, to let go of our story. Takes courage. Because the story provides comfort. And there's nothing wrong with that. We have a tough enough time as it is. Don't we deserve a little comfort? Well, sure. Sure, but it can get in the way. It can become the whole thing. It can rob us of the kingdom. So, springtime, beauty, one key. A second one would be connectedness, relationship. Becoming aware of the other person as they are, with all their idiosyncrasies and their annoying habits and their craziness. Accepting them without insisting that they be some other way. Who cares if they slurp their soup? I won't get into my family. But one time it dawned on me, after some practicing on the cushion, who cares? If my wife leaves her shoes in the living room, friends, partners, children, when we can relax into that love, the barriers that separate us fall away. We discover we can love our life just for the gift that it is. And dogs and cats and birds are pets. They have a lot to teach us about that. Become the guru, the Roshi, the hero who returns from the journey in the wag of a tail, another sign of spring. There is no spring apart from the wagging tails in Riverside Park of the dogs who are suddenly off the leash. A third key, creativity. Making art or just appreciating art, music, literature. Building a business. Creating community, like the staff at this Dharma Center works so hard to do. Social activism, addressing the policies that are keeping structures of injustice in place. The kingdom is spread out before us, but we do not see it because we think we are separate from it. We think it's up there, out there, some other dimension, or over the hill, up the road. Springtime, relationships, creativity, we begin to experience ourselves as not separate. We begin to experience ourselves as part of one great body. The life energy that flows through the mountains and the rivers, the trees and the forests, the plants and the animals, is the same life energy that is flowing through us. Shambhala calls this larger view sacred world. It's sacred because that living energy is what religious and spiritual traditions refer to as spirit. It's what binds us together. And they call it sacred because of that. The larger view, the deeper view, sacred world. It's the kingdom that we've been longing for. It's spread out before us. And the Dharma teachings and practice, and in this context, Shambhala teachings and practice, help to clear a path of the obstacles that obstruct our view, the habits of mind. The old ideas we're carrying about who we are and what we think we should be. Nostalgia for the past, romanticizing the past and trying to somehow recreate it in the future. The teachings and practice of the Dharma help to transform the negative emotions that obstruct our view of what this life is. a great gift. So hang in there with your practice. We have some time if you'd like to offer any thoughts of your own or questions.
Hi, thanks for your talk. I had a question just so I had clarity on a lot of great stuff that you said. The first poem that you read,
yeah.
And then you made the association for San Francisco and Santa Fe.
Yeah.
And then you made the association with Joseph Campbell, who I really love, and the hero's journey. Yeah. That's one sort of set of ideas, or just one idea. Mm-hmm. But that's not the kingdom, is what you're saying. None of that, the kingdom is separate. In other words, you talked about Joseph Campbell's journey, mm-hmm. but the journey isn't the... His journey... is not the kingdom. The kingdom is separate. The kingdom is now. The poem that you read talked about going toward the past, like going to the future, to go into the past.
Yeah.
And that's all journey. But the kingdom that you're talking about is present. Is that right? These two separate?
I think the journey was also present. You know, for those who take the journey, it is just their life. I don't think it's journeying anywhere other than just in this moment, you know, journey from moment to moment and discovering that that is it. That is the kingdom. It's not off somewhere. These guys may have gone, men and women, across cultures, may have gone off someplace looking for something, but what they discovered was that it was closer to them than they were to themselves in their imagination, that it must be someplace else. It must be off someplace, or I have to do something. I appreciate the ambiguity of how I was talking about this. Maybe it's unavoidable, or maybe I just haven't gotten clear enough myself to present it in a way that is a little more, is clearer. I'm not sure. But I know for myself, especially at this age and stage, you know, when the future is limited, after all, then that realization that this is it becomes a lot more raw. And a lot more immediate and a lot more demanding. And that's a wonderful thing about being able to get older, you know, living long enough to see the truth of that.
I have recently been talking to a lot of people about this idea of taking the leap, like jumping off the cliff that's holding them back from facing what, either from making a change in their life to do what their heart is telling them to do, mm-hmm. rather than this idea of what we should do,
mm-hmm.
Or stepping over that boundary that's like keeping them from living their life, like from mm-hmm. not feeling alive.
Yeah.
And hearing you talk, I'm thinking to myself, it's like, this idea of jumping off is really just letting go, and letting mm-hmm. go of the notions of our story. That's mm-hmm. the scariest mm-hmm. leap
yes.
maybe we will ever take.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's more of a thought that I just wanted to share.
Yeah. Well, thank you. I think that is a good summary. I think we could have heard you say that, and I wouldn't have had to go on and on up here.
No, I think
because that,
your going on took me to get to
okay,
that.
Okay, good. But that's that's it, really. The thing is, the story, you know, stories, of course, can be, it's literature is stories, and we want that, and it's a wonderful thing, and it's creative, and, you know, and stories can contain our aspirations. Stories are a good thing. It's just that the point is we can get lost in them and so invested in them, and that we're just sort of living out of that story as a character in the story, rather than seeing what is right before us. Which is richer because it is real. And story has a place, I think, as aspiration, as and the notion of the kingdom, even as a future thing. You know, it can be a vision for how things ought to be. And there is certainly in Western religion, in Judaism, which was the source of ethical monotheism of Christianity and Islam, you know, there very much is that. That sense of the kingdom is what ought to be. And in that case of Judaism, it is justice for the poor. You know, so we need to be aware of these stories, the myths and symbols that go with them, and see how they can inform our idea of what the creative work we need to do to create community and a more just society. So I think this dialogue between Judaism and Buddhism, between Christianity and Buddhism, and Islam is going to be in there more and more, is important, you know, because Buddhists have a lot to learn from these traditions that define justice and define the kingdom in the terms of righteousness and justice.
You know, it's interesting that you're talking about sort of an interfaith point of view, because I don't know if you've heard or if everyone here has heard of a book called A Course in Miracles. Mm-hmm. Which is sort of Christianity-based,
yeah.
But it sort of redefines some of the terminology in the Bible.
Yeah.
And from that and from just studying a little bit of Kabbalah, the poem you read, my interpretation was slightly different.
Okay.
Which is still very Buddhist in its ultimate meaning, but that this idea that we're... As we move forward, we're moving into the past, mm-hmm. not the past that we live, but the past as it is remembered. I think that it's not an actual past, present, future idea as much as it is that at some point in our consciousness, we didn't have fear and all the stuff that we were holding on to or the noise that's in our minds, and that it is when we return to that state of mind mm-hmm. without the fear.
Or without the, what?
Without the fear or like being mm-hmm. in the present mm-hmm. or being in a place of fearlessness or a place where we have learned to let go.
Yeah.
So whether it's that one moment during meditation or whether it's a permanent state of being where we just can sort of abide in that enlightened state, if you will, mm-hmm. that ultimately that is actually not a moving forward into the future, but moving back into our original place of being to begin with.
I see.
So effectively, it's like all the religions are saying the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, you know, in my humble point of view, it's like it seems that it just sort of, you know, in different religious traditions, that meaning sort of gets lost by the way we look at it in a limited way.
Mm-hmm.
And it's in fact a story that takes away the spiritual essence, you know,
mm-hmm.
and that ultimately sort of brings it back to the same ultimate point.
So, ultimately,
I don't know if that
it
makes
brings
sense,
it back. What brings it back?
So, I mean, it's in that poem is talking about
yeah.
when we let go and
yeah.
we are sort of one with the moment,
mm-hmm.
you know, whether it's for a second within meditation or whether it is when we've completely become a Buddha, you know, that it's just that state of being that is not in the future. Mm-hmm. It's actually sort of what we originally have always been, mm-hmm. or we originally are right now.
Yeah. Returning. Yeah.
So there's almost like a timelessness to it, even though it's talking about the past and the future.
Yeah. Even in Buddhism, they talk about your original nature, our original nature, don't we? Is that the same thing?
Right, exactly.
Yeah. Our original nature, unencumbered.
Right.
Free of conditioning. Yeah.
And
thank you.
Ultimately,
for
that's
that.
The kingdom, you know. So.
And what's your own background in terms of religion and spirituality?
I was raised Hindu.
What?
I was raised Hindu.
Uh-huh.
But I do Buddhist meditation and I read the course and study Kabbalah, so
Know. Well, Hinduism allows for that kind of multicultural, multi-religious. It has reverence for all traditions, right?
Yes,
it's non-exclusive in that
very
way.
Very much so, yeah. But you know, and to me, it was just a case of like, you know, my grandfather used to say, you know, if there were blind people trying to figure out what an elephant looked like and they only saw the elephant, like felt the elephant from one side, you would only, you know, somebody'd say an elephant is like a rope.
Yeah.
Somebody else would say it's
the
like a pillar.
Yeah.
And this is just sort of affording the perspective of being able to walk around the elephant. You know?
Yeah.
So,
it's good. Your grandfather.
Hi.
Yeah.
I was listening last night to a teacher, a Buddhist teacher, and he, his name is Ajahn Chah, and he was saying, I don't remember it exactly because I was falling asleep, but he said that see the ugly in beauty and see the beauty in ugly.
Mm-hmm.
And for some reason, it just came up when you brought up the tulips, and you seeing the tulips. And I was wondering, thinking it's quite easy to see the beauty in tulips and in springtime, but it's harder to see the beauty in a dying flower or when the dog goes to the bathroom in front of you.
Yeah. Unless
on your
it's
foot.
Your dog, though. It helps if it's your dog, though, right? That you love.
So I was just...
It doesn't bother you.
So I just had to bring that up because I thought it was very beautiful what you said, but I've also been thinking about what this teacher said.
Yeah,
so.
I think that's a good counterbalance and necessary of what you just said. So thank you for saying that.
Yeah. John, what do you think perhaps about when we turn our back on the kingdom?
Mm-hmm.
Or we choose a ghetto, for instance, like when we become drug addicts, or what then, or...
Well, what do you... Just wait for a second. What's your take on that? When we become addicted, and all of us know addiction in one form or another, you know, things that we get attached to that seem to provide some kind of comfort or relief or release for a time.
Yeah, so is that part of the kingdom?
Yeah, it's a good question. What do you think?
Well, I think at least it's part of the hero's journey, maybe, right?
Yeah.
We can only hope that.
Yeah. And since the hero is us, then it must be part of the kingdom, since that's where we really are.
It's like he was saying about the dog pooping, you know, it's kind of hard for us to see these things, though.
It can be hard at times, yeah. I think, honestly, just as a my testimonial to practice, the more you practice, the more you see that all this stuff, all of your opinions and all of your judgments and all of your so-called discriminating mind, you know, that prefers this but doesn't like that or likes, you but doesn't like somebody else, that it's all just, you know, generated by this these ideas about who we think we should be or ought to be.
Thank you for your talk. I feel really inspired and energized. I was a little apprehensive when you were talking about kingdom, and I thought it was going to get very religious, mm-hmm. because that's just naturally how I get around that stuff. Mm-hmm. But I think you made it in a way that was very approachable.
Oh, good. Thank you.
Yeah. What was interesting is, like, I've been sick recently, so all of a sudden I had extra time on my hands, and I was at home. And I realized I started to fantasize and think about this guy I dated in the past. And it was like, the interesting thing was, I knew that it was like I was going back into the fantasy, but I just wanted to keep going there because I didn't want to feel the loneliness of being home alone with no mm-hmm. one there. And mm-hmm. so then I went onto Facebook and tried to, like, look up what he was doing. Is he as cute as I remember him? And all this stuff. And I actually couldn't find him, which was really strange. Mm-hmm. Maybe he unliked me on Facebook. I mean, I've been practicing for a long time, and I still, it's like that thing, that hook, you know, I still got hooked. Mm-hmm. And I think if I was home alone for another day, I would still find something else, like watching a Grey's Anatomy episode upon episode. Mm-hmm. So I think besides, it's like the loneliness, like feeling your own loneliness is another reason why I don't always want to see the kingdom, you know? Mm-hmm. Is that uncertainty of also being alone, right? Mm-hmm. And what does that mean? Mm-hmm. So
kind
I don't
of
know.
A drift, like, or
yeah, but
ungrounded.
I love the hero's journey and Joseph Campbell, but the hero's journey starts after we've been alive for a while, and the whole point that Joseph Campbell talked about, which you talked about, is the whole point of us deciding we want to go to San Francisco, we want to quit our job, mm-hmm. we want to see the ex somehow. Mm-hmm. The point is that there's been a whole set of years that have gone by where we have not been who we really are. Mm-hmm. That's what Joseph Campbell talked about, mm-hmm. is it's actually a return to us, like the poem talks about, right? It's this return to us. In your idea, it couldn't possibly happen, unfortunately, for a child to be loved from the ground up, because actually the child has to lose its way and then 30 years later quit their job mm-hmm. and decide that they want to be, you know, and live in the Caribbean and paint.
Yeah.
You know, so that's what Joseph talked about. That's mm-hmm. his whole idea, the hero's journey, you know, mm-hmm. like Star Wars, all these things just return, and that mm-hmm. poem did. But you were also talking about the kingdom from the get-go, and that more speaks to what you're talking about. From the get-go, we are present, we are connected, we are creative, we are looking at the dog shit, we are mm-hmm. looking at the tulips right mm-hmm. in the moment. If mm-hmm. that's what we teach, then that's the kingdom. That's the message I'm getting from you, and I'm really fascinated that Joseph Campbell separated the two, mm-hmm. and that you mentioned it's ambiguous, because it is very, you know, mm-hmm. you know. But anyway, that was some thoughts that came up for that notion. Okay. Anyway,
good. Thank you. It's very rich.
Mm-hmm. Something that I've been struggling with is something that you've been talking about. So I'm really anxious to hear what you think about it. I mean, you're saying that the kingdom is here, but mm-hmm. but. Blacks during the slave time said, no, that's not my vision. There's something else. Mm-hmm. Mandela said, no, there's something else. Mm-hmm. So when is it, you know, this is your kingdom. Mm-hmm. Deal with it, which is something that I've been dealing with for a couple of years. Mm-hmm. And it's challenging, but it's my kingdom and I'm dealing with it. And then mm-hmm. how do you know when it's a structure that needs to be changed? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't think the kingdom means that everything is just fine. It means that this gift of the life we've been given is just fine. It doesn't mean that the structures of injustice don't need to be changed. and that we can we are at our most effective when we're not encumbered by our own, you know, getting caught up in our own little construct of I like this, I don't like that. I mean, the personal stuff at that level. We have a broader vision. We can see more clearly what needs to be approached and worked with. You know, and we're freer to work with it because we're not bogged down in our own stuff. I think it's that. You know, so wisdom and compassion in from the Buddha Dharma's point of view, you know, wisdom is seeing that through the construct of ego. And then compassion is what we do next. I said, there's nothing we can hold on to, nothing to grasp. That's quoting Buddhist teacher Shohaku Okumura, who said, there's nothing we can hold on to, there's nothing we can grasp. We open our hearts.
Do we see two kingdoms? You know, like the kingdom you say now, mm-hmm. in front of us, and then the kingdom of God?
Mm-hmm.
So that would be two kingdoms?
That would be one way to look at it, yeah, to think that they're separate. But, you know, as I live my life, I come to think that they're the same, that they're not separate. You know, the kingdom of God is not some remote, distant, in the future or in another dimension. That's all. Okay. That they're not separate.
The thought that came up in my mind was that I was thinking of the idea of the child being taught, you know, but the child, I think we're always amazed at how creative and in oneness a child is before he's taught, right? He's at the kingdom, I think, right? Yeah, yeah. He's already born creative and one, right? That's what I was thinking. It's just a thought that went by.
Thank you. And thank all of you for being here tonight and for your good conversation and for your attention. Appreciate it.
Yeah. Thanks for listening, everybody. Visit us at ny.chinbala.org for information about classes and weekend retreats. You can see our schedule of weekly Dharma gathering talks that are coming up, and you can come see those talks live and in person every Tuesday night. If you happen to live in a different city, there's probably a Shambhala Meditation Center near you. Look us up. Email us at podcast@shambhalanyc.org. Your questions, comments, suggestions for what to do when you wake up too early on a Sunday morning. And tell your friends about the podcast. Keep listening. Stay open. Later.